Wait for it, wait for it. Welcome to the BerlinBrigade.com podcast with your host, David Guerra.
Happy New Year and welcome to episode 27 of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. I am your host, David Guerra, former member of Weapons Squad, 3rd Platoon, Alpha Company, 6th Battalion, 502nd Infantry, Berlin Brigade, U.S. Army. I thank you for taking the time to join me today on this, the latest episode of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. I hope you, your family, and your friends had a wonderful holiday season. And on that note, without any further delay, let's get this first episode of 2011 started.
It's time for a special announcement.
This podcast is being recorded Sunday, January 9th, 2011, and as of this time, our registry count is over 3,800 names. That is a lot of people. That's awesome. And I thank you for choosing to be part of the BerlinBrigade.com community. A great big thanks to everyone. And it's because of you, your new registrations, those of you that have updated your email addresses. That's great, because I know in 2010, a lot of awesome connections were made, and 2011 won't be any different. Continuing making those connections, and that's what it's all about, and that's what this BerlinBrigade.com is all about. That's why I started it. So remember, the only way to sign up, though, is by clicking on the registry link at the top of the BerlinBrigade.com homepage, then click on the Click Here link that appears after the line that reads, "For new registry submission, comma, change of email address, comma, or removal, please click here." Next, a reminder to and an invitation, if you haven't, to continue to check out the Daily Cold War Minute. The Cold War Minute's a daily podcast I started back on June 1st, and it recaps events in Cold War history on a daily basis. We are now in the seventh month of the daily podcast and another 5 months to go. However, like I said last episode, after the year has ended on May 31st, the Cold War Minute will continue, but it will take a slightly different road, and it'll stay truer to its original Cold War Minute definition. So again, you can check it out. You can check out the Cold War Minute at its blog page at coldwarminute, all one word, .blogspot.com, and you can also subscribe to it on iTunes and have it delivered to your iTunes player, to your iPad, iPod, Nano, whatever. You can have it delivered there on a daily basis, and what you do there is you go to iTunes, and then you type in Cold War Minute, and in the search box, and it's three separate words, Cold War Minute, and it'll pop up there, and all you just do is click on the subscribe button, and there you are. Next, around the 1st of January, I received a unique surprise from the BerlinBrigade.com hotline. And it came from a former member of the Berlin Brigade who was stationed in Berlin in the late 50s to very early 60s. And he was asking if I or anyone out there knew if a film, kinescope, or a video copy of the Bob Hope Show in Berlin existed or was available. Now, this is not the show that Bob Hope did during the Berlin airlift. Now, this is the one he did just before the wall went up. He was in Berlin, and if it was Bob Hope, it would definitely going to be funny. So if you or anyone you know has a way to get a hold of a copy or has a copy or anything available to that's willing to share, or, you know, we'll get the rights and all that under control. But again, we want to know that something out there exists. And if it does, we can work on getting all that other stuff under control, all that legal stuff. So please either drop me a note or call me, call the Berlin Brigade hotline at 413-274-4233. And like I said, it'd be pretty awesome to get a copy. And like I said, if it's out there, let us know and let's see what we can work out. So again, thanks to the caller on the Berlin Brigade hotline. Now it's time for mail call. That's right, we get letters, stacks and stacks of letters. Okay, all right, really, more like a list of unread email. So here's a couple of those emails. First email, it comes from someone who worked on the Frankfurt to West Berlin military duty train for quite a long time and is searching for a former U.S. Army train conductor by the name of Sergeant Wise, who was stationed in Berlin from 1987 to 1990. Then Sergeant Wise moved to Saudi Arabia, probably 1990, in support of Operation Desert Storm, Desert Shield. And our email writer lost the contact info for Sergeant Wise So if you are Sergeant Wise, the former duty train conductor, or know where Sergeant Wise is or how to get a hold of Sergeant Wise, please drop me a note here at BerlinBrigade.com, or you can call the hotline with any info you can provide. The next email comes from a former squad leader in Bravo Company, 26th Infantry, in 1968, and the writer is wondering if anyone has any information regarding some patrols that he believes involved a staff sergeant and a driver. They would basically drive back and forth in and out of East Berlin simply to make the point of the access into East Berlin that we had it. And we were able to do it. And the patrols were either referred to as 2G8 or possibly G28 patrol. So if anyone has any information about such patrols, and it would be much appreciated if you could share it with us. Now, you can send me an email at davidg@berlinbrigade.com or call the info in to the Berlin Brigade hotline, berlinbrigade.com hotline, at 413-274-4233. As always, I want to thank everyone that has made a purchase from the commerce page here at BerlinBrigade.com and picked up some of that cool BerlinBrigade.com gear from Cafe Press. Remember that with every purchase, you help to continue the support, maintenance, and upkeep of the BerlinBrigade.com operations here at the BerlinBrigade.com headquarters. So again, I thank you for your support. It really does go a long way.
Take your seats because it's time for a special guest interview.
Joining us today on the BerlinBrigade.com podcast is writer-director Eric Stange. He has written and directed The Wall, A World Divided, and After the Wall, A World United, documentaries about the wall, the Berlin Wall. Eric, thank you for joining us today. Let everybody know about the documentaries, and especially the one that's coming up real soon, and how they can see it, where they can see it, and you know what? The microphone's yours.
Thank you, David. After the Wall is going to be premiering on PBS, public broadcasting nationwide, on Monday, January 17th, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. It's showing on most PBS stations that, and in that slot. It's not showing everywhere, so you have to check your local listings. But it's coming up on a Monday night, which is traditionally a night for history shows on PBS. And After the Wall is part two of this two-part series on the Berlin Wall and the unification of Germany. So it starts literally the day after the Berlin Wall fell, November 10th, 1989. When most of the world was celebrating, of course, that this symbol of repression had finally crumbled. But in fact, people in power, and particularly three people, George Bush Sr., George H.W. Bush, Mikhail Gorbachev of the Soviet Union, and Helmut Kohl, the Chancellor of Germany, knew that with the fall of the Berlin Wall, though it was a wonderful turn of events, it was also a very dangerous, potentially dangerous turn of events. Because suddenly, the real sort of flashpoint of the Cold War, Berlin, was completely up for grabs. No one knew what was going to happen. And, you know, we forget now, 20 years later, when all this came to such a wonderful, peaceful ending, that there was the potential for really serious danger. For one thing, the Soviet Union had 380,000 crack troops in East Germany, and East Germany is a tiny country, I mean, geographically very small. So they had 380,000 troops, missiles, tanks. I mean, you know better than I do what they had. That was your job to know that. But it was a dangerous situation, and suddenly there was no real government in place, and Gorbachev had vowed that he would not interfere in the internal events of other Soviet bloc nations. And no one knew whether he was going to keep his word in this case. What did that mean when he had all these troops? They were crack Soviet troops. For someone like President Bush or Helmut Kohl, it was a very scary and delicate situation, waiting to try to figure out what Gorbachev in particular would do and what the East Germans would do. So that's the drama of part two, After the Wall. And we tell a story of those first few months when literally the Cold War could either blow up or go away. And fortunately, it went away for a lot of interesting reasons. The first part, which was broadcast last June on PBS, but can still be seen on the PBS website. If you go to pbs.org/thewall, you can watch part one, which is about how the Berlin Wall came to be. And that's another story that I think most Americans either forgot or maybe never knew. I'd certainly forgotten it. And the reasons why the Berlin Wall were built are really interesting. It has more to do with economics than anything else. And then the result of it, of course, was to create this isolated nation of East Germany, the German Democratic Republic, about 18 million people living in a kind of bubble, very strange bubble. And so part of what our film goes into is what life was like for ordinary East Germans. What was it like to grow up in that country, to live in that country, to raise your children and have your life? And then the other really important strand in that first hour is how the opposition movement grew. Because East Germany, as you probably know, had one of the most repressive and effective and pervasive secret police forces that's ever been seen in the world, the Stasi, the state police, who infiltrated every part of people's lives and had hundreds of thousands of agents and informers. And so it was very hard to build any kind of opposition in East Germany in the 60s, 70s, 80s. But somehow it happened, and the story of how it happened is really interesting. It has to do with a kind of basic mistake that the dictators of East Germany made. And I won't give it away, unless you want to ask me about it. So those are the two films, The Wall, A World Divided, and After the Wall, A World United.
If you're just joining us or just picking up at this point on the podcast, joining us today is Eric Stange. He is the writer-director of The Wall, A World Divided, and After the Wall, A World United. Eric, how did you get involved with this project?
Well, I first heard about it through the Houston PBS station, KUHT, otherwise known as Houston PBS. And I knew them through a previous film I'd worked on some years ago. And they had been in touch with the office of George Bush Sr., who is in Houston and lives in Houston. And they had heard that he was interested in taking part in a documentary about modern Germany, because he feels that it's a story that Americans don't really know very well and that they should know, because what happened in Germany in the 80s and 90s really has shaped the Europe we know today. And Bush was, of course, centrally involved in this. I mean, the Berlin Wall fell during his presidency and Germany became reunited. East and West Germany became reunited during his presidency, and he was very much involved in the reunification process. And so part of it was because he knows how important it was. He's not particularly interested in blowing his own horn. He's not that kind of person. I've discovered after interviewing him for many hours, he really minimizes his own role in these events. But he does feel that it's important for people to know about it, and that it's a history that's, for whatever reasons, just kind of slipped by for a lot of Americans. So that's how it came about, and it's been a just wonderful project to work on for the last 2 years. I've learned so much and met some incredible people, and of course got to interview President Bush, got to interview Mikhail Gorbachev, Condoleezza Rice, James Baker, and Helmut Kohl. It's been, along with a lot of ordinary people whose names nobody would know, but whose lives were very much tangled up in these events.
Well, glad to hear that President Bush was on board with this right from the very beginning, and so basically it's his idea. And then again, everybody else that you mentioned, again, it's one of those coups where everybody recognizes that it is an important thing, and then everybody jumps on board, and they're all willing participants, and that's a very good thing. And yeah, it's my understanding, from the moment that wall fell, everybody had to act fast. My understanding, it was just a brief block of time where things could have gone in a whole different direction. And luckily, everybody was on the same sheet of music, and that's a good thing. Let me ask you this. What do you see as the one thing that the viewer will take away from not just the first one, but this one and the entire project together? What's the thing that they'll take away from it?
That's a good question. I think that the two films, they have different messages. The first film, the wall, about the Berlin Wall, and about the opposition movement in East Germany that finally brought down the wall, is about the fact that people's desire for personal freedom is impossible to quench. I mean, you can repress it, you can suppress it, you can imprison people, you can torture people. Eventually, you know, it's like water coming through a leak. It's going to find its way. And so that, I think, is the message of the first film. What's interesting about the second film is it's kind of a different message. The second film sets up or tells a story about how there were really two different impulses in the new Germany. So the wall goes away. Suddenly the democracy has won. And there were a bunch of people in East Germany who had been in this opposition movement that had helped bring down the wall, who suddenly found themselves having a say in how the country is going to be run. And they wanted to create a new kind of country. They didn't want to just become part of West Germany. There were plenty of things about West Germany they admired. Of course, they wanted a democratic country, but they didn't think West Germany was perfect. And they thought that East Germany could continue to exist as a kind of better version of West Germany. But they got swept aside really fast because most East Germans, as it turned out, and this became evident just a few months after the wall came down with the first free elections in East Germany, which were in March of 1990, turned out most East Germans really wanted economic security. That was first and foremost in their minds. And yeah, they wanted democracy, they wanted freedom, and they knew they were going to get that anyway. But they really thought that the quickest and easiest and most effective way to get the kind of economic security and prosperity that they had seen on West German TV for years but had never been able to share would be to simply elect the same kind of government that West Germany had. And that's what happened. And that signaled that really the majority of East Germans just wanted to reunify with West Germany and become part of the same country as soon as possible. So that was really interesting. It's it looked to me like a real lesson in the politics of the practical versus the politics of the ideal. You know, these opposition leaders, these people who'd really risked their lives fighting to bring down the Berlin Wall, were doing it out of high political principles. They were willing to put themselves on the line. And then when their chance came to try to convince their countrymen that they could make a new and better and sort of ideal country, people didn't buy it, didn't go for it. They wanted to do what was sort of the thing that was right in front of them. So that's very interesting to me as a historian, you know, to see that process.
Wow, very good answer, very detailed answer. Thank you for that. And I can see where it brings a different perspective to things. I guess as the soldiers that were stationed in Berlin, we got to see the oppression firsthand. We made trips into East Berlin. And even though it was the jewel of communism or the jewel of the Warsaw Pact or the jewel of East Germany, we still got to see that oppression firsthand. And it goes back to that the basic human instinct of being able to have the ability to take care of yourself, take care of your family, take care of your loved ones. And at some point you realize that you can't really do it unless there is some sense of freedom where you're not afraid. You're able to do what you want to do to be happy, to the pursuit of happiness.
Yeah. No, it is. It's really interesting. And, you know, these Germans had been able to receive West German TV always, except for a couple of little pockets of East Germany that couldn't get the signal. But most East Germans had been watching West German TV for 20, 30 years. They knew how West Germans lived. They knew the kind of stuff that West Germans got to buy in the stores and the kind of clothes they wore and cars they could drive. And none of it, very little of it, was available in East Germany. And so you can't blame people for wanting to share in that, something they've seen but haven't been able to touch for so long. Yet what we also heard from East Germans about what happened after the fall is that what they didn't understand was how hard it was to compete in a capitalist the economic system for those things. Because, of course, they had no experience with that. They grew up in a country where your apartment is given to you, your health care is given to you, your education is given to you, and you're guaranteed a job for life, no matter what. I mean, it may be a totally idiotic job, and you may not actually get anything done, and the whole economic system was crumbling around you, but you were guaranteed all these things. And so for a lot of East Germans, it turned out not to be so easy. They suddenly realized, oh, you know, I don't have the training. And then it was very hard to get training. And part of the story that our second film shows, the one that's going to be on January 17th, is about really a million or so East Germans who never got back on their feet after reunification of the two Germanys because they were thrown out of work. The inefficient and obsolete factories were closed down. And there were a lot of people who just couldn't get retrained for whatever reason. It had a lot to do with your age. If you were, you know, under 30, under 35, most of those people did fine. They just, you know, adapted to the new economy. But if you were over 30 or 35, it was harder for some people. And a lot of them got left behind. And that's sad. And West Germany has paid a huge price to rebuild East Germany. It's been very expensive for the nation as a whole, and still is. I mean, they're still paying for it. Wow. But it's getting better. But people...
Oh, we all know there have been economic issues with Germany as far as the after the reunification.
Oh. Yeah. The economy has been difficult everywhere. Mm-hmm. And Germany has had the strongest economy in Europe for a long time. But... even so, they have put so much money into rebuilding East Germany that it's taken a big toll on their economic prosperity. One historian told us that the amount of money that West Germany put into rebuilding East Germany after the wall came down was the equivalent of one Marshall Plan every year for 5 years or something like that. The Marshall Plan being the huge influx of money the U.S. spent to rebuild Europe after World War II, an unheard of amount of money at the time. And this, just in this one country, that amount was spent repeatedly. So that gives you a sense of what it took and is still taking to rebuild East Germany after 40 years of a closed economy. So it has not been a simple thing. It wasn't just this kind of happy story of a divided country coming together again. It's, you know, for the most part, it's a positive story. But, and you know, there are only a few people and who would ever say that they miss the old days. Few people do, but very few. There are few East Germans who still claim that life was better in the old days, but you know, the great majority of people, of Germans, of course, realize that everyone's better off, but it hasn't been easy.
Oh yeah, I'm more than certain somewhere in the Ukraine or Russia, somebody is saying, you know, we had it better off under communism. But then again, you know, that's just a reality. And it's one of those that, for better or for worse, you know, this kind of change, it was definitely a good thing.
I'm sure it all has to do with whether your life got better or worse. I mean, for those whose lives got worse, they can blame it on that, although there are plenty of other reasons, too, I think.
All right. Well, that's change for you. And I, you know, no matter what, I still say change is a good thing. Now, let's talk about these shows a little bit. You've got these – well, let's talk about you, actually. You've got these two in the can, The Wall, A World Divided, and After The Wall, A World United, and that will air for everybody Monday, January 17th on PBS. Check your local listings. Check with your local PBS station to get the exact airing date and time. It could change just depending on where you're at. Now, you've got these two done. And, you know, the question is, well, what are you doing? What are you working on now? Or what can we expect here in the weeks, months, years?
Well, thanks for asking. I'm involved with a few projects. One is a biography, well, not really a biography, a film about Edgar Allan Poe, a famous writer. It's called The Mystery of Edgar Allan Poe. And it explores the circumstances around Poe's death, which is a really strange story. Poe died under completely mysterious circumstances in Baltimore in 1849 at a pretty young age. And no one has ever figured out what happened. So given that he was the inventor of the modern detective story and in some ways the modern mystery story, it's ironic that his death, his own life and death, were very mysterious. So that's that film. Won't be done for quite a while. I'm working on a project about the San Francisco earthquake, but designing a walking tour for cell phones for mobile media use in San Francisco that tells the history of the San Francisco earthquake as you walk around the city of San Francisco. You're getting images from the days literally right around the earthquake on your cell phone and hearing information about what the street you're now walking on looked like the day after the earthquake and that sort of thing. So that's a fun project. That's a couple of them. Those are the main things I'm working on.
That sounds like a lot of fun, and that should be very interesting once that project is completed. So please let us know. Drop me a note, and I'll let everybody know, especially those that are in the San Francisco area or heading over that way. That really should be a lot of fun. Well, everybody, we've been talking to Eric Stange. He is the writer-director of After the Wall, The World United, and that's going to air on PBS this Monday, January 17, 2011. Check your local listings for time. And a date, just in case it's not going to be airing on Monday and at your specific location. But, Eric, before we bring this all to a close, this wonderful time chatting with you and talking to you, do you have any last comments, remarks, anything you want to just get the word out to everybody before we bring this to an end?
Well, I only want to say that these two stories about modern Germany are really worth looking at in order to understand how the Cold War, which for people who grew up in my generation, certainly, and those before and after me, the Cold War looked so dangerous and so threatening for so long. And to understand how it came to a peaceful end, it really is important to look at Germany. That's where it all happened. And I'm not saying that these films tell the whole story, but they tell part of the story of how it is possible to bring a peaceful resolution to things that look like they can never end peacefully. So that's what's been most illuminating for me about it, and I hope that's what people can take away from it.
Well, thank you, Eric. And again, definitely it is, you sit back and you look at the timeline and you see how everything just was on the brink, and I guess that's where brinksmanship came from. But you look at it, and yeah, you're right. It was just... it all comes to a nice, nice little end, and it's like, wow, all of this, and that's what we got. Well, that's good. Eric, thank you for joining us today and taking time, and we look forward to the airing of After the Wall, A World United, on Monday, January 17th on PBS. Thank you, sir. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you, David. I really appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to hearing it on the website.
That was Eric Stange, writer, director of After the Wall, A World United. And be sure to watch this very exciting episode on Monday, January 17, on your local PBS station. Check it out for times, just in case things change. As we wrap up another episode of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast, I want to invite you to call and leave a voice message or an audio comment on the BerlinBrigade.com hotline, 413-274-4233. As always, please don't forget, you can send us comments, concerns, questions, and show ideas to davidg@berlinbrigade.com. Also, if you or someone you know has something to share with all of us, please drop me a note, again, at davidg@berlinbrigade.com, and we'll set up a date and a time to interview you, and before you know it, you're on the show. I also invite you to stay up to date with the latest at BerlinBrigade.com by following us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/BerlinBrigade, all one word. Also, be sure to check out the BerlinBrigade.com Cinchcast at www.cinchcast.com/BerlinBrigade for periodic, quick site updates and other information. But that's not all. You can also join BerlinBrigade.com on MySpace, or you can do what over 1,000 of our fellow Berlin Brigade members and supporters have done, and that is to join us on the BerlinBrigade.com fan page on Facebook by following the link on the homepage, the BerlinBrigade.com homepage, that is. All of us invite you to come and join all the great Facebook conversations like those that Jackie Dunn, Abraham Telvey, Darren Cheney, Paul Steven Steinkohl, and others are having. So come on over, join our conversation on Facebook. Well, Listen, that's it for this 27th edition of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. Again, I want to thank our special guest, Eric Stange. And we got other guests coming soon. So listen, in the meantime, I am your host, Dave Guerra. And we continue our never-ending quest for the key to the clock tower. If you have it, please let me know. And until next time, I thank you for listening. And goodbye. Auf Wiedersehen. Tschüss.
Sergeant Major, dismiss the brigade! The BerlinBrigade.com podcast is a Dave Guerra production. Thank you.